Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
All right, here it comes.
It's Ben and Woods.
Try to say this nicely. When you look at Ben, Paul, and I, it doesn't scream athlete.
With Ben Higgins.
Bicka, bicka, bow, 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 bicka, bow, bow, bump, bump, what, ha, 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 ha. On your mark, ready, set, let's go.
And Stephen Woods.
I want to win. I want to win at all costs. I really do. Other than, you know, lying, cheating, and stealing, I don't want to do that. But whatever it takes to win, I'm willing to do.
Ben and Woods.
Blame it on the Henry.
On 97.3 The Fan.
Yeah!
All right, another loss in the column, bringing us closer to the end of 2019. But I think a lot of Padres.
It's been a great day today. Can't wait for tomorrow.
I think a lot of Padres fans were already kind of had 2020 circled on the calendar. Ben Woods with you here, 97.3 The Fan. We'll take a look at the Padres in the minor leagues. Have our once every couple of weeks chat with Kevin Charity from Mad Friars. That's coming up at the bottom of the hour on our SDCCU fan hotline, and all guests on Ben and Woods appear on the SDCCU fan hotline. SDCCU has low mortgage rates, equal housing opportunity. Apply today at SDCCU.com. And then in our 8 o'clock hour, Mark Grant from the Padres television broadcast crew on Fox Sports San Diego yesterday.
Can you guys believe we haven't had Mark on all season?
That's crazy. That is crazy.
Well, part of it is that we've had Jesse on doing the Incorporator every week, and Jesse's off these games, so we can't do the Incorporator this week. That's why we're not. It's Tuesday. Normally, we'd have Jesse on for the Incorporator, but he's taking a series off, getting a blow, and Ted Leitner and Tony Gwynn Jr. are calling the games this week.
Getting a what?
Getting a blow. A rest. That's what baseball people say. Come on, you're a baseball person.
Never
give a guy a blow.
What was that?
A blow. A rest. That's a blow.
I have never heard that.
You've never heard that.
Never once.
Guy needs a blow. He needs a day off.
Oh, my God. What is happening?
That's a common expression.
What's the problem?
Common expression. So we've got Mark Grant, who's going to be with us at 8:35 today.
I've heard get the guy some blow.
No,
I've heard that
cocaine.
Before. Okay.
This is a blow.
I've heard that.
So yesterday, Don Orsillo and Mark Grant were named the number one television broadcast team in baseball by the Awful Announcing website, which it was basically the fans vote on it. They got over 1,300 votes for each team's broadcast crew, letter grades. They averaged them all out, and Don and Mudd edged out the Giants broadcast team, which had won the last 2 years. To take the top spot for the first time. So, big time congratulations to those guys who always do a great job.
Yep, they smoke everybody. We are extremely fortunate to have those dudes there. They keep you interested in this team when this team fails to keep you
right.
interested.
So, with the eyes starting to turn toward 2020, it was with eager anticipation I saw when the schedule was released for 2020 yesterday morning. First thing that stuck out to me about the Padres schedule is that they had it all in brown.
Yes.
Instead of blue.
Yes.
For the first time.
Amazing. It really
did. All those schedules and magnets and little fold out schedules they've given out over the years, it's always been white for the road games and blue for the home games.
Yep.
And this year, because they're going to be changing to brown as their new primary colors, brown for all the home games. And I thought, okay, this is something different to be sure. So I'm always curious, how does the schedule set up? What does it look like? Who are the interleague matchups going to be against? When are you playing teams? And I start looking, and my first instinct is, okay, they've misprinted this schedule. This is a misprint. This is embarrassing. They've made an error, because there's no way that this is how the schedule starts for the Padres in 2020.
Quickly. Do you know how they make a schedule in Major League Baseball? Is it all computers?
It's all computerized now. Used to have a husband wife who did it.
I remember. Yes,
yeah.
We talked about it.
It's been 10 or 15 years, and now a computer comes up with like 15 million computations and narrows it down, and they've got open dates. You know, hey, there's concerts, there's things that keep ballparks unavailable.
Yeah.
They take all those, they plug it all in, and it spits out like what's supposed to be an unbiased
and
schedule.
You just got to wear it, right? Like, yeah. You just have to say, oh, okay, yeah. This is what it is.
So, opening day, and it's really early this year, March 26th, Thursday afternoon, Colorado Rockies come into Petco Park. Home opener again at home. That's fine. I mean, it's got to open against someone. It's a four-game series against the Rockies. And then the Atlanta Braves will come in the Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday to complete a seven-game homestand to start the season.
Yep.
There's nothing weird about that. A division team, a National League team. I'm thinking, okay, that's fine. Good team, the Atlanta Braves probably. But, you got to play them all. Okay. So then the Padres go out on the road. And this is where I think, oh, well, they've made some sort of mistake. Because their first road trip goes to Colorado and Atlanta. And I go, oh, guys, you accidentally copied and pasted the first line onto the second line. You're not just playing the Rockies and the Braves, the Rockies and the Braves to start the season.
Yeah, so for the first...
No, they are.
2 weeks, the first 2.5 weeks of the season, all we will see are Padres, Rockies, Padres, Braves. That's it. In our house, then in their house.
Yeah.
It's very
that
odd.
That is some ridiculous traveling,
right.
too.
Yeah, it is.
But get this, and then they come home... And you get to see the Giants for three.
This is amazing.
And then guess who comes back to Petco Park?
The Rockies!
Again, the Rockies. There's 10 games against the Rockies before April 17th.
Oh, my God.
You're playing them. They only play them 19 times the whole season. You're playing them 10 times.
In 1 month. In 4 weeks.
In
3 weeks.
Less than 3 weeks. 3.5 weeks. You're playing them 3 weeks, exactly. From opening day,
yeah, three weeks
from that day, you will have played them 10 times.
That is un-effing believable.
It is the weirdest,
it's unbelievable.
It's the weirdest schedule I've ever seen. I don't necessarily like it either, just because the Rockies, to me, are always a team that starts a little faster before Coors Field wears down their pitching staff. And you want to face them 10 times in August and September.
Absolutely.
When they've had to wear that whole season. 10 times when they're fresh in March and April, not advantageous. That's not the only bizarre thing, though. So you're already done. You don't play the Braves again after April 8th. You're done with your season series against the Braves.
Yep.
You head to Chicago on the next road trip to face the Cubs.
And well, you go Arizona for two.
Arizona for two. Then Cubs, you go some interleague at Detroit. But the Cubs come back in May on an all-Chicago homestand. You've got three against the White Sox, four against the Cubs. You're done against the Cubs by May. You have your trip to you host St. Louis and go to St. Louis on consecutive home and road trips. You're done against St. Louis in May. You go to Miami and then come home for Miami in May. You're done against Miami in May. The Padres will have finished their season series against the Braves, the Cubs, the Cardinals, and the Marlins all before the calendar hits June.
Yep.
Next year. I've never seen anything like this in a Major League Baseball schedule.
It's pretty wild, man. August, very sparse. Home games, 8 home games in August. So, dog days, you're on the road. This is the year you're supposed to be competing, for a wild card at least. You're barely at home in August. September, you're back home for a pretty good stretch against some kind of what should be middling teams in Seattle and San
Francisco.
Although
you do have to finish against two teams that very much should be playing for playoff baseball at the end, in the Twins and the Dodgers.
So this is the interesting. The Twins are always that team that just, at the end of the year, they just catch fire, right, and go into the playoffs. So you got three with the Twins, and then you finish three with the Dodgers at home, which hopefully are meaningful games next September, 24th, 25th, or 25th, 26th, 27th. And then the season's over after that.
Hey, some of the best Padres seasons have ended against the Dodgers.
Yeah, man.
So I didn't hate to see that. Interleague-wise, obviously they're playing the AL Central. That means Franmil Reyes returned to Petco Park,
yep.
The Cleveland Indians. Coming for a couple of games in June. The Padres will also go to Cleveland for two games in August. As I mentioned, you'll see the White Sox and the Twins. Also the Mariners for the natural rivalry. That's in September. Padres have interleague road trips. They will go to AL Central teams, Detroit, early in the season, as I mentioned. And they also will head out to, what's the other interleague road trip that they've got? Got one more somewhere. Kansas City. Oh, yeah, Eric Hosmer's return to Kansas City at the end of July. So those are some of the highlights of what is really, to me, one of the most bizarre schedules I have ever seen put together for a Major League Baseball
team. Yeah, you know, March, April, May, they're a ton of home games. It's going to space out weird. September, though, they are going to be at home quite a bit, which is what you want, I guess. They haven't been that great at home, but hopefully next year is a different team altogether. So, yeah, it was an interesting one, man. There's no doubt about it. Another weird one is, Benny, they're on an East Coast swing with the Phillies, the Mets. Then they fly all the way across the country to take on the Dodgers at home for three. So all the way back, then three against San Francisco, and then the All-Star break. So a lot of weird travel, a lot of cross-country, a lot of away games in August. It should be a weird one, to say the least. So, but you can't do anything about it. You just got to wear it.
Yeah, you do. You just play the schedule. And
play it as it
is. And I'm not going to say, oh, the Padres really got some bad luck here. You don't know. I mean, the Rockies could have early injuries in the season that, you know, they're decimated in April. And you're like, oh, yeah, we got lucky. We got to play them 10 times early in the season.
Good tweet from Jorge here. Says, how many brawls do you think we'll see between the Rockies and Padres during the span of 10 games? There's already tension. Yeah. I mean, that can drive you insane. Speaking of brawls, by the way, do you know what we missed yesterday?
The anniversary.
The anniversary. And you know what I did last night? So I watched the anniversary of
the Atlanta Braves, Padres 1984. 35 years later, just maybe the most epic baseball brawl in history.
So I got into a rabbit hole of watching the best brawls of all time, and that was up there for sure. The Dick Williams basically going out, and he's about to get thrown out of the game, so he gives the pitcher a list of all the guys that he wants hit and what he wants done, and Greg Nettles gets drilled, Pascual Perez. We couldn't hit that guy three times at bat. We had to wait till the fourth time to finally drill him. It was unbelievable. Fans jumping out of the stands. There's Ed Whitson comes out with his shirt off. It was amazing.
You know, one guy who's really in the middle of all that.
Bavacqua.
Well, Bavacqua, Kurt, is swinging big time. You know who is tougher than, well, his folk music career would make him seem?
Tim Flannery.
Tim Flannery.
He's a hard ass.
That guy is a fighter.
Dude.
And then he goes out and plays his guitar, and he's like, yeah, I'm in light stuff. And then you get him on a baseball field and a beanball roar. He's the first guy who's out there taking swings.
Dude, it was, that one was amazing. And Pascual holding the bat, the whole thing, it was just yesterday, 35 years ago, that brawl. And they said, they did a whole
13 ejections and four arrests or something.
And they said they did a special on it, and they said basically this is a Padre team that would fight each other. Like, and then Dick Williams was like a mad scientist.
Oh, they hated Dick Williams.
Yeah,
that year.
But what it did is it brought them together, and no one messed with them after that, they said. It's weird how that works when you protect your players.
All right, it's Ben and Woods. We got Don't Do This coming up next. Three sports stories that make you shake your head every morning at 7:20. Woods, what do you got for us?
Oh, man. Former Poway quarterback Tate Martell in the news again. Some old tweets coming back to bite him.
I'll tell you what happened to the world Fortnite champion as well.
This story is very, Fortnite. Very, very creepy.
That is coming up next.
Don't do this.
I got a little surprise for you, you know what I'm saying?
Don't do this.
Listen, if I've said something bad, I mean, tell me I'm a bad boy. You know, just tell me I'm a bad boy.
Why? Just why?
I get the argument. You don't have to explain it to me. I'm not a moron.
Let me tell you why I am a dumbass.
It's time for Don't Do This.
Don't do this.
On 97.3 The Fan.
Three sports stories to make you shake your head every day with Ben and Woods at this time. First, a reminder, coming up in the next 30 minutes, we'll announce today's biggest fan from 97.3 The Fan. And our winner today will have 10 minutes to call back and claim the prize package, including Padres Red Sox tickets for the game on Sunday, August 25th. We've also got some UCLA Oklahoma tickets. You want to see some college football up at the Rose Bowl. And you'll be entered into our grand prize drawing for a Las Vegas getaway. A road trip up to the all-new Flamingo, completely redesigned, plus tickets to see Paula Abdul's new show. That is coming up in the next 30 minutes here on 97.3 The Fan. Woodsy, I'll get us started today. I talked a little bit a couple of weeks ago about the Fortnite World Cup and the kid, 16-year-old from Pennsylvania, who won the $3 million grand prize at the USTA Tennis Center. They had a stadium set up.
Fortnite.
Well, this also has brought the kid a little notoriety. His name is... His online name is Bugga, but his real name is Kyle Giersdorf. And while he was playing Fortnite yesterday at home, He got swatted. Have you ever heard about being swatted?
Yeah, my mom used to swat me in the back of the head.
Not that kind of swatted. So I guess this is something that the kids do nowadays, and it sounds really dumb. So he's broadcasting online on Twitch. I'm sure he makes a bunch of money for playing Fortnite with people online. And he said, I've just been swatted and then disappeared from the game for a while. Someone called up police in Pennsylvania where he lives and said, hey, this is Kyle Giersdorf. I've shot my dad multiple times, and I have my mom tied up in the garage. You know, I'm like suicidal. So they send out the SWAT team to his house. You know, the guns drawn, you know, they surround the house, everything. And people actually do this now as a prank, and they try to get the SWAT team to come out to people's houses. It's called, it has a name, it's called being swatted.
That's like the worst, that's like the worst thing. I mean, we used to prank call people, but it was never, like that.
Yeah, you're not tying up incredibly valuable community resources.
Yeah, call like a pizza place and like order a bunch of pizzas. That's it.
That's still kind of bad too.
Actually. I was like 10 years old though. I mean, this is insane.
It's costing a small business a lot of money.
So dude is sitting there playing Fortnite.
Yep. And all of a sudden, the SWAT team is surrounded.
Oh my God.
The house is surrounded. Come out with your hands up. I mean, it's really dangerous, too. You know, we get one itchy trigger finger somewhere, someone sees something wrong, and you could have tragic consequences to something like this. It's not funny at all.
At all. It's awful. Oh, my God. Well, mine's a lot more lighthearted than that. You know the name Tate Martell, don't you, Ben?
Tate Martell, yes. He's a he was a big-time high school football prospect who actually started here, Poway High,
played
for
a year here,
and then transferred to, I believe, Bishop Gorman in Las Vegas.
One of those guys, I think everybody feels like Tate Martell. We've been waiting to see him in college football for like 10 years. Didn't have a real great day yesterday. It was announced that at the University of Miami, the Hurricanes. We don't talk a lot of Hurricanes football here on 97.3 anymore,
but the U.
So Tate Martell. Found out yesterday that he is not going to be the starter. He transferred.
That's not where he started out in college.
Correct. Yeah. So I got a timeline for you. You ready?
Yeah, please.
2012, he commits to Washington. 2015, he decommits from Washington. 2015, he commits to Texas A&M. He says in 2016, the other quarterbacks at A&M are, quote, ass, and that he could start as a freshman easily. Then in 2016, he decommitted from A&M. 2016, he committed to Ohio State. He enrolled at Ohio State in 2017. Then he tweeted something about swinging and missing to the guy that transferred in to Ohio State. I believe his name is Justin Fields. So then he decommits from Ohio State. He leaves there. He transfers first to Miami. Yeah. And then he lost yesterday the quarterback battle. He will be either second or third string. Lost that out to a freshman.
I kind of doubt that he will. I'm guessing he'll
enter the transfer portal once again. This is just...
How low can he go to end up so he actually has to play?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things
Rocky
where...
Rocky interested? My guess would be no.
So our buddy Ryan Phillips wrote an article, 5 potential landing spots for Tate Martell. And SDSU was on... Look, the guy is kind of... He's kind of corny. I mean, he's got like the headband and the sleeve and he like... big into like let's go to work and like he's not very good. He's Baker Mayfield but without like the talent he's an eyewash guy it seems, and really he's not a big fan of competition. So he probably is going to enter the transfer portal once again, and hopefully at some point somebody will see him on the field. But I think if you are Rocky Long, maybe that is a name you look at, because he's from all accounts, he's a pretty dynamic quarterback.
I wonder how much it's him, how much it's his parents,
his people.
I mean,
yeah,
when a kid transfers after freshman year of high school and changes cities, likely for playing opportunity, you can tell that there's some helicopter parents probably involved
big
in
time,
this process
man.
As well.
Big so, time, big
all
time.
Part of a big giant. Don't do this.
But it don't just came this. Back. Those old tweets came back to bite him in the rear end yesterday. Don't swing and miss, especially twice. Well, that's at least twice for him.
Finally, a tough weekend for the ESPN Sunday Night Baseball crew, including Jessica Mendoza,
yeah.
Who missed the game on Sunday after getting into a car accident on Friday. She got rear-ended at full speed on a Southern California freeway. She was trying to go, and they said, no, just take... rest. She's going to be okay, but they said take the day off. So it was just Matt Vasgersian and Alex Rodriguez calling the game between the Giants and the Phillies in San Francisco. Well, while A-Rod was there, they rented a car for him and the crew, and while they were doing the game, A-Rod, the rental car got broken into, and A-Rod reported that he had $500,000 worth of electronics and jewelry that were stolen out of that car while he was working the game at Oracle Park in San Francisco.
Sounds like an insurance scam to me. Why would you have that much stuff in your rental car?
Why, if you're A-Rod and you should have hundreds of millions of dollars, are you worried about an insurance scam, though?
I don't know, because you can.
It's A-Rod. $500,000 worth of stuff may not be that uncommon. I mean, his jewelry alone that he's got could be $350,000, $400,000 worth of, diamond rings. And I mean, it's A-Rod. It's a lot. Maybe he had bought something. Maybe he had went to the store and bought something for J-Lo.
Yeah, left it in the car.
It was really nice, left it in the car. He was going to go to the airport right after the game, so he had his stuff with him. Look, I don't know. I don't know what the explanation is. But
I can't really hate on A-Rod for it, because I'm a guy that leaves his car like unlocked and leaves a bunch of stuff in it. I'm that guy, so it happens. I just don't have that much stuff.
I don't think anything bad happened to Matt Vasgersian as far as I can tell, but definitely a rough, rough weekend for the ESPN Sunday Night Baseball crew.
I hope they make it out alive.
That was Don't Do This with Ben and Woods on 97.3 The Fan.
Padres, lot of promotions in the last few weeks in the minor league baseball system. Guys getting tested at a higher level. We also saw Mackenzie Gore getting shut down at Double-A. Yep. What does it all mean? We'll get caught up with our insider on the Padres and the minor leagues, Kevin Charity from Mad Friars. He's going to join us. That is coming up next, so stick around to Ben and Woods on 97.3 The Fan. Dive into the Padres in the minor league. Still the number one ranked farm system in baseball, according to MLB Pipeline. Although, the team in town right now, the Tampa Bay Rays, are number one, according to Baseball America.
Interesting.
And I've heard that they'll probably be number one on Baseball Pipeline coming up pretty soon, too. So,
well, listen, we're graduating a lot of players.
The difference, though, is that the Rays are already a playoff contending team.
Yep.
And they've got a great farm system.
Yes, yes. That's the rub.
Am I jealous of the Rays here? I'm jealous of the
Rays.
I
think I said it yesterday. I look at our lineup and I look at theirs. I'm like, oh, I'm so much more happy with ours. They go out and knock the crap out of us last night, and the bullpen is locked down. And yeah, it's
that's quietly a good team.
They are a really, really scary team.
Very quiet.
Yeah, man.
So we'll talk with Kevin Charity from Mad Friars coming up here in just a second. All right, just because the season goes on, the minor league season coming to an end here on Labor Day coming up, so some changes going on below the major league level for the Padres recently. And joining us right now in our SDCCU fan hotline, we chatted with him every couple of weeks this season, Kevin Charity from MadFriars.com, back with us here on Ben and Woods. Kevin, good morning to you.
Hey, what's going on, guys?
Hey, so I would say, yeah, this is kind of a period of change. The Padres have made a number of moves, promotions designed to get guys' looks at a different level here at the end of the season. What are some of the notable moves that you've seen here in the past couple of weeks, Kevin?
Well, I think the obvious one is the most recent one is Luis Patino getting moved up to Double-A. Really, since the Futures games, he's come back, he's been kind of gone up another level at Lake Elsinore, just racking up strikeouts and just clearly needed a new challenge. So it'll be interesting to see how many games he gets down the stretch. And then obviously, CJ Abrams getting moved up to Fort Wayne was kind of a big deal, because I think he's the first high school player they've had under AJ Preller that's made it to Fort Wayne in his season debut, in his pro debut. So that was a pretty significant thing. Obviously, the shoulder injury that he had that's going to miss a couple weeks kind of hampers that, but I think those are the two biggest significant moves in terms of your top, four or five prospects that we've seen over the last couple of weeks.
Kevin, what are the Padres going to do with Ty France? He is absolutely mashing right now. And, we got Ian Kinsler kind of clogging up a spot on the big league roster. Do you expect him to be part of those call-ups here pretty soon?
Yeah, I would imagine when the season ends on Labor Day, he'll be up. I mean, for what it's worth, he's been playing a lot more second base. He started second base last night, so he's kind of moved around, you know, first, third, and second.
How's he looked? How's he look at second base?
I mean, he's looked okay. I mean, he, you know, for what it's worth, he hasn't made an error. I mean, I haven't really seen anything too challenging in, you know, the limited kind of games I've seen him play there. But I think if he can just be adequate there with his bat, I think he should be in the mix for a spot next year if they don't trade him in the offseason, because he's a right-handed bat with power. I mean, ideally, I'd love to see him get some looks next year and spell Hosmer against lefties. But I think, you know, when you look at what he's doing, I mean, he's hitting 400, which I think a stat I saw the other day was he'd be like the first player in, you know, minor league baseball since like the 30s to hit 400. He's slugging almost 800, which is unreal. I think the guy has earned an opportunity. And, you know, it's a, you can make the argument with the juice ball, but he's the best with the juice ball. So,
well, there's a juice ball in the big leagues. And, I, you know, the comp that I have for him is a guy that the Red Sox have named Michael Chavis. And Chavis came up as, I believe, a third baseman. They got him playing second. You know, he's playing second. He's played some first. Didn't play first very well, but, boy, that's a nice – if he can hit at the big league level, that's a nice little piece to have, a guy that can play three out of four infield positions.
Yeah, absolutely, and especially, you know, if the DH ever comes to the National League, yeah. I mean, it gives you more flexibility.
Kevin, for the first time a couple of weeks ago when you were on, we talked about Joey Cantillo, the prospect to – kind of came a little bit out of nowhere, at least from my perspective. I hadn't heard of him until earlier this year, and then was just lighting it up at Fort Wayne. He's another guy who got a promotion up to Lake Elsinore, made his debut earlier this week. What kind of track do you think he's on in terms of how quick he could get to the big leagues?
You know, he's still really young. I mean, he's 19, but he's like a young 19. To be honest, I didn't think there was any chance that he would make it out of Fort Wayne this year. So I think that obviously kind of puts him on a track faster than I would have anticipated. I mean, I would imagine next year, I mean, maybe he goes back to Elsinore and gets to Amarillo by midseason or later. I mean, my best guess, if he stays on the trajectory he's on, I would say end of 2021. Another, you know, but again, another left-handed pitcher that they have in their system, that the system's loaded with those types of guys. If he can add a few more miles to his fastball, and he was 89 to 91 in the Elsinore the other night. If he can hit to like 91 to 93, I mean, that's a legitimate, you know, borderline top 100 guy that could be that guy going into next year.
We are talking to Kevin Charity from Mad Friars here on Ben and Woods. And a question for you. You know, a couple weeks ago you put out that list of all the players that the Padres need to protect in the Rule 5, or, you know, add to the 40-man or whatever it was, guys that they need to protect and make sure other teams don't snag. Now, Franmil Reyes was one of those guys, and the Padres chose not to protect him, and now he's gone, obviously not because of that. But when you look through that list, man, what are the names that you look at and say, you know what, if I'm A.J. Preller, if I'm the Padres, these are the guys that I absolutely have to hang on to?
You know, this list this year coming up isn't going to be as daunting as next year, where you basically have almost all the guys you signed in 2016, you know, in that international class. A couple of names that I think are going to be in that mix. I mean, the first name that jumps out at me is a pitcher, Ronald Bolaños, who started the year in Elsinore, is in AA now. Has been a little bit inconsistent, but he's had a huge uptick in his fastball. I mean, he was hitting 99 this year. You know, he's mostly sat 91 to 94 when I saw him, but I mean, his, you know, fastball has gone to another level this year. He has a really good breaking ball. He's a little bit older. He's 22, I believe. So, he's not the youngest guy in the world, but he's really taken a step forward this year and has had some really good outings in Amarillo. You know, Isturi Ruiz, who they got, you know, in the Strom deal a couple years ago, hasn't had the best year offensively, but when you look at like the tools that he has and the power that he has, he's moved to the outfield with Xavier Edwards coming up to second base. He's another guy that would jump out of me. From there, I mean, there's a few other pitchers. I mean, they've had some guys like Elliot Ashbeck, who's thrown the ball really well in Elsinore. But there's not really a ton. I mean, it's, at this point, it's more, I would say, more quantity than quality. David Bednar is a really good reliever that I like a lot that would have to be protected. But I think next year you're going to have to see guys like Gabriel Arias and Jason Rosario. You're going to have to make some really difficult calls. And I think that's where you're going to start seeing some of the moves made to either trade guys or you know, they're going to have to move some guys off their 40-man going forward.
Kevin, it's not unusual to see, you know, all teams will shut down some minor league pitchers to save some innings, you know, before the end of the season. So having Mackenzie Gore stop pitching is not strange, but the fact that the Padres are going to still have him throw some bullpens and possibly return for the Double-A Texas League playoffs for Amarillo is a bit unusual. What do you make of that news that came out last week?
The shutting down part wasn't surprising at all. He's already doubled his innings from last year, and he's thrown 120 this year after throwing 60 last year. With the blister issues he's had no issues this year. I think to kind of have him throw on the side is a little unusual. I think maybe they just feel like having him in a more controlled environment where they can kind of, you know, not have to worry about him pitching in games and worry about, you know, if he's running out of gas, does that affect his confidence? That could be a part of it. I think that the main idea is just to keep him fresh and to make sure that he's good to go next year, because I feel like he's a guy that is an obvious candidate for the rotation. But I think it was the right move. I think he's thrown a ton of innings. Let him kind of take a breath, you know, have a great offseason and go into next year really full throttle, trying to make this club kind of similar to what Paddock did this year.
Kevin, how's Taylor Trammell doing?
He's off to a great start. I mean, if you scout the stat line, he's hitting 167.
Cool.
Strikeouts are up from where they were Chattanooga, which isn't necessarily, or Pensacola, I believe is where he's at, which isn't unprecedented. I mean, it's kind of expected when you change leagues in the middle of the season like that. But again, when they acquired him, if you looked at the stat line and he was hitting about 238, I believe it was, about 350 on base, it wasn't necessarily that impressive. But I think the thing that's encouraging about that deal that, you know, I was a little skeptical of it. The fact that all these evaluators are just raving about how good this kid is and how much potential he has. You have to look beyond the box score at this point. He's still 21 years old, so he's still really young. I mean, he's younger than league average. So I think you're going to have to just really watch him next year and see what he does. But, I mean, yeah, the early returns right now aren't super encouraging, but I think there's still time for him to figure it out.
Speaking of changing leagues, it took Franmil almost 2 weeks to get his first home run in the American League. Happened last night.
Yeah, big one.
For the Indians. Important, yeah. It was a 6-5 walk-off win for a Carlos Santana home run. Last thing for me, Kevin, and this isn't strictly minor leagues because we were talking about it last week in the major leagues yesterday as well. It is so hard to know how patient you need to be with some of these prospects. I brought up the name Cal Quantrill, who was a guy that I felt like some Padres fans were like, they got to look at him and they got, this guy's nothing special. What else do we've got? And all of a sudden has really looked sharp here in the second half of the season. Manuel Margot, Woodsy and I were both stunned, is still 24 years old. We were ready to toss him out, I think most of us were, a year ago. And now he's looking like maybe he can be an everyday player. When you've got such a bursting to the seam system like the Padres do, it makes it even that much more important to be able to self-scout, evaluate their own talent, because as you've already kind of gone through, the Padres are going to have some tough decisions to make, you know, going forward on their own guys, much less the draft and trades and everything else. But they got to figure out which of their own guys are real and which of them are, well, fake.
Yeah, I think that's going to be the key is, you know, they're obviously going to have to make trades, and you have to trade the right guys, because if they trade a guy in a deal, like a 3-for-1 type of deal, and one of those guys blossoms while the guy you kind of kept over him doesn't blossom and is kind of washes out in Double-A, obviously that's kind of where the concern is. I think for me, one of the things, especially with the Trammell deal, where I know a lot of fans hated it out of the gate because they traded a really popular player, but they evaluated Trammell and decided, hey, this guy is worth it. And I think when you look at AJ's record of trading talent and acquiring players from other organizations, he's been really successful at that. I mean, Paddock and Tatis are shining examples of that. I think what I think the key is going to be is, you know, I think you have to look at the depth and figure out, okay, who's going to be the next people up, like, you know, for the outfielders, like which outfielders do we trade? And I think they've done a good job of kind of targeting guys and protecting guys and knowing which guys are part of their future. So I have a lot of faith in what they've been able to do. I think you can definitely question this regime's ability to construct a big league roster, but I think on the player development side, I think they've done an amazing job.
Kevin, good stuff. Next time we chat, we'll be gearing up for the minor league playoffs. I'd imagine Padres will have a number of their affiliates that make it to season this year, so we'll have a bunch to chat about. Thank you.
Yeah, of course.
As always, Kevin Charity with us from MattFriars.com on our SDCU fan hotline. SDCCU has low mortgage rates, equal housing opportunity. Apply today at SDCCU.com. Again, I think that's such an important point to make, and not simply because of the Franmil Logan Allen trade for Taylor Trammell.
Yeah.
But, you know, think about this. If the Padres really do hit on a lot of these minor league prospects, and they really are the real deal. So you've got, you know, 25, 30 good players that are major league caliber players ready to come up here in the next couple of years. You don't have room on the roster.
No.
So what do you have to? What do? I mean, you've already got 25 guys in your big league roster. You got other guys coming up. As Kevin said, you have to make trades.
Yes,
and you have to basically trade older players for younger players because you don't have room for more guys who need to be on the 40-man roster.
You mean trade younger players to acquire older?
No,
players.
No, opposite. I mean, yeah, you can maybe put a package together if you want to get a superstar,
yeah,
at the big league level, like a pitcher, a frontline guy. That'll happen, but you'll also see more trades like the Franmil Logan Allen trade.
Got it.
Where you trade 24, 23-year-olds who are on the cusp of, you need to either protect them, you need to sign them, you need to do something with them, or you have to cut them because, well, you've got all these other guys you need to protect coming up. So you actually do need to trade these kind of graduating prospects for younger guys like Taylor Trammell, 19 and 20-year-olds who still are a few years away, to keep the balance in your system. You can't just have all the 23-year-olds graduating at the same time. You don't have a place to put them all. You have to juggle these players. And I think it's going to be frustrating for Padres fans. Why are you trading these guys for younger? Because we don't have room for all of them in our system.
That is interesting. That is, I also always will lean more towards the, let's package the young guys for a good older guy. That to me is.
And
I think
that will happen.
That's
got to
happen.
For
yeah,
sure.
That has to happen. I mean, but I get your point also of, we can't freak out a little bit like I did, especially like trading two guys that play in the big leagues for another prospect. It was the immediate freak out. The goalposts are now moving again. And I need to not think that way.
Because there's going to be more of those trades simply because of the math of how the rosters work. As all these guys come up, there's not going to be spot. There's not a spot for Ty France right
but
now.
But here's the thing. That needs to be balanced. Now, if we had packaged Ty France and Estuary Ruiz and a couple other guys to go out and get Zach Wheeler or Noah Syndergaard, fine. Like, give me both. I need both instead of just one. I don't want to trade for more prospects while not adding frontline starters.
But it is, it's one of those kind of hidden dilemmas for a GM that I think we as fans don't think about that often because, well, you just, hey, it's easy. Get the better players in, and, you know, that's how you're going to win baseball games. And sometimes there's a few more nuts and bolts to it.
Sure. Speaking of nuts, Ben, Antonio Brown has just tweeted.
Oh, really?
You ready for this? I'm looking for a Shoot Air Advantage adult large helmet that was manufactured in 2010 or after. In exchange, I will trade a signed practice worn Raiders helmet. You're going to need to do better than that.
And $10,000.
Yeah, and $50,000. Yes, exactly. And the responses are as what you would think they would be. I mean, he is getting, people are tweeting pictures of old helmets. It is amazing.
By the way, this will only, you know, probably get him through this season if he finds one.
Because he's got to upgrade.
Because then next year he'll need to
push it back
one.
Year,
and they
yeah.
weren't made after 2011. So
right.
The reckoning is coming for Antonio Brown and his helmet.
Might as well just dive in now and just get used to the new one, AB. You can't do this every year.
A couple other baseball notes. Woodsy, I mentioned Franmil Reyes hit his first home run. The Cleveland Indians took over first place in the AL Central by a half game over the Twins for the first time since April. After they took 3 of 4 in Minnesota over the weekend, they get the walk-off over the Red Sox. The Yankees continue to demolish the Baltimore Orioles.
Yeah.
I mean, this has got to go down as one of the biggest single-season series mismatches in baseball history. Gleyber Torres now has 13 home runs just against the Orioles this season.
Out of 26.
Half of his home
Half
runs.
Half of his home runs.
That's the second most by a single player against one team in one season in baseball history.
Who was the first?
Lou Gehrig, I think it was.
Yeah, against
14.
Like the White Sox
yeah.
or something.
That was back when they used to play teams like 20-something times every year.
Jesse Agler had a stat the other day. I was listening to the game. I can't remember exactly what it was, but it was something along the lines of the Yankees have hit more home runs against Baltimore in July than, like, the Tigers
have
and
hit.
One other team's, then, like, total hit.
Yeah, they demolish. I mean, that's what you have to do. You have to beat those teams to get to where, with the injuries that they've had, I mean, thank God the Orioles are there and that you play them as many times as you do, because those are guaranteed wins at this point.
And then you mentioned the anniversary, 35 years of the brawl between the Padres and the Braves. It's also the 25-year anniversary of the 1994, the start of the 1994 baseball strike.
What a brutal...
That ended that season.
Tony Gwynn, the Yankees...
Was hitting 394 at the time.
The Yankees were rolling, I remember, just rolling along. What year was that?
1994.
And they hadn't hit their stride yet of like 96. They were about to. And I just remember being so devastated. I was a freshman in college in 94. I got a text this weekend, Ben, from, I'll just call them a source. And you know what the text said? It's coming again. It's coming again. And I've reached out to another source this morning with a text that I will not use your name, but I need to know the...
That's why I asked Ron Fowler about it.
I need to know your percentage of what...
Yankees were 70-43.
They were rolling.
At the time of the strike. And, you know, Tony Gwynn says he thinks he could have done it, hit 400 that year.
Yep.
So we focus on that. But the biggest tragedy, crime of the strike had to be the fact that the Montreal Expos, the team that never reached the World Series, still hasn't, as the Washington Nationals, they had the best record in baseball. They were 74-40, 6 games up on the Braves in the NL East. It was their one year. It was really their one great shot to win a World Series, and it got taken away. If I was in Montreal, I would be forever devastated by that.
It set the game back so much. It took steroids to get us back into the game.
Imagine in 3 years, Padres are, you know, running away with the West. They're on pace for 110 wins. And there's a strike? Oh, my God. It's going to be devastating. Devastating. Hour number 4, Ben and Woods coming up next. Why does Tom Verducci hate Manny Machado on 97.3 The Fan?
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.